Dave! Doc Hallen's been killed.
Doc Hallen? What happened?
It's over at his place. You gotta come now.
Now, wait a minute, Steve. Tell us what happened.
Well, I'm trying to tell you. Now, this thing had killed the doc.
But what was it?
Well, it's kind of like a... It's kind of like a mass that keeps getting bigger and bigger.
From then on, there's no stopping the blob as it spreads from town to town. Mob hysteria sweeps one city. Before long, the nation and then the world could fall before the blood-curdling threat of the blob. Starring Steve McQueen and a cast of exciting young people.
I mean, is there anything like this on Earth?
Not that we know of.
The Blob from 1958 told the story of an amoeba entity, one that would grow and grow and grow, and it would move and hunt its prey. What was it seeking? And that movie is strangely a really long way from the truth in the natural world, but so very close to it. Anne Jones with you on Off Track on RN, and today, slime molds, one of the most incredible creatures. Slime molds, one of the most incredible things that I've ever broadcast about on Off Track. I don't know what's more interesting about them, that they hunt for prey or that they grow structures that look like architecturally designed futuristic sculptures, or that some of them are colloquially known as demon's crap.
This is a reasonably newly discovered slime mould spot, but hence there's no trap.
We're at Sarah Lloyd's place towards the top of Black Sugarloaf Mountain in Tasmania, between Launceston and Devonport. The property that Sarah shares with her partner is also shared with thousands of trees and creepers and old man ferns and tons of leafy substrate beneath them, fallen logs and stumps of huge trees that were left by early loggers. And in amongst all of that, there are predatory myces, which move through the forest substrates, stalking their prey. Sarah has owned this land for almost three decades and walked its tracks for almost every day in that time. But it was only 5 years ago that she realised she was sitting in a slime mould hotspot. And in fact, these tiny things, millimetres high, would become a major part of her life.
Oh, wow.
So we're crawling through a very dense ferned area. The logs that are on the ground are completely green with moss.
With bryophytes.
Yeah.
So they're not, in fact, in Tasmania we have a lot of leafy liverworts. So a lot of the mossy logs are actually liverworty logs. And they do have lichens as well.
We're looking for a detail that's only millimetres high.
See here, they're a Diderma species. And the outer covering is, it's a bit like an eggshell.
They're gorgeous. If you didn't know, you'd think that the moss was almost flowering with little white bobbles, tiny little white bobbles.
Yeah, except mosses don't do that, of course.
This piece of equipment that you've just...
Absolutely essential.
What is it?
It's just a 10x hand lens, so most botanists would have something like this. But the other piece of equipment that's essential is a little torch.
What you've got is the torch in one hand and 10x in the other.
Yeah.
And you shine some light on it and get up nice and close.
Get up really close with the hand lens.
And a whole world opens up.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah. Well, the slime mould fruiting bodies, most of them are around 2 millimetres high. And there's one around here that's the same as the one we saw right under the log, this one. And that's, have a look at that with the hand lens.
Oh my goodness.
They're like little flowers, aren't they?
They're just amazing. And look, you know, because they're so small, to the naked eye they look like they're sitting quite close. But as soon as you get any magnification on them, they really burst into 3D. These are not flat structures sticking to the wood.
No.
They're gorgeous. Oh, God, they're everywhere.
They are everywhere.
Not just beautiful, absolutely stunning and intriguing. They have a life cycle unlike any other I've ever heard of.
So there are a couple of different types of organisms that are called slime moulds. There are cellular slime moulds, which are probably better called social amoeba.
so I don't know much about them. I'm talking about the acellular slime molds. Okay, so the spores will germinate into amoeba. So these amoeba are single-cell organisms that move about in the soil or other substrate, and they feed principally on bacteria. Now, I should say, at the amoeboid stage, they do have the ability to transform to dormant structures called microcysts. And they'll form microcysts if conditions are unfavourable. So if it dries out or they run out of food, they can form these microcysts. We don't really know how long they stay viable in the substrate, but it could be years. And the amoeba then come together and then eventually form the plasmodial stage.
Okay, to recap so far, spores, which look like the finest dust you would ever see when the wind touches them, blow off and settle somewhere. And from the spore comes an amoeba, which then roams around and eats as much as it can. And if the conditions are no good, it'll go into a dormant cyst. Otherwise, they'll go around on their own for a while, but then something changes. The amoeba are drawn together and multiple nuclear fissions occur without any cell divisions. What you get is this slimy mass that has potentially millions of nuclei in it. It's called a plasmodium. The plasmodium, this is a feeding stage,
is it?
It's
the second feeding stage. So the amoeba feed and then the plasmodia feed as well. And the plasmodia can have millions of nuclei, but no cells. They don't have cells, hence the acellular slime molds.
That's incredible.
It is incredible.
And it gets more incredible. The plasmodium moves and hunts. It might seek bacteria or fungi or even other slime molds, and it will creep along the substrate in a stop-start sort of way. They often look slimy at this stage and make all sorts of patterns of slime mold superhighways to reach the food source. Some of them look like a pile of tinned spaghetti. Some look like veins on a placenta, like the tree of life itself.
And then from the plasmodial stage, the fruiting bodies form.
From the plasmodium itself. Yeah. So they grow up out of the plasmodium.
Yeah, in fact, I have got a photo somewhere where you can see a little fruiting structure on the vein of the plasmodium.
And it's the fruiting bodies, the groups of spores suspended on little sticks that we're looking for in the bush today. Minuscule balls, sausages, saucers, dishes, filaments suspended on hair-like stalks, only a couple of millimetres off the ground, or a log or a leaf or a fern. This is Off Track on RN, and I'm Anne Jones, visiting today a property at Black Sugarloaf Mountain. It's this amazing area full of forest, once logged and now studied in depth by Tasmanian naturalist and author Sarah Lloyd. And lately, she's been particularly interested in one of the smallest of all inhabitants in her forest, acellular slime moulds, Myxomycetes. And I have to say, they're one of the weirdest things that I've come across so far in my adventures for Off Track.
Okay, so there's the sclerotium. So the sclerotium is the dormant stage of the plasmodium. So the plasmodium's the moving feeding stage, and most of them are probably within the substrate. In the case of this species, it's a species called Batamia utricularis, and it's a fungivore. So further up here, I think it's eaten most of the fungus. There was a pink fungus, and the Batamia utricularis was just moving along here and feeding on it, so the fungus here is pretty well gone. By the time it got to here, the substrate had dried out, and so it had formed this dormant structure called a sclerotium.
The bit that you're referring to is
just that shiny.
That shiny.
Yeah.
So it looks sort of as if a little drop of caramel has dried.
That's
on
right.
The bark.
Yeah, that's a good description.
Now, when you say moved to eat the fungi. Do you mean grow to eat the fungi?
No,
as in
the plasmodium moves along the surface. So if I came down here with my macro lens and took a photo a couple of minutes apart, you could see the movement in the plasmodium. So they have what's known as shuttle streaming. So they'll move forward for, I think, about 60 seconds, and then they'll stop, move back a bit, and then they'll move forward again.
Why do they move back a bit? They just do. It's one of their quirks. Two steps forward,
maybe
one
they
step
just
back.
Stop.
They just
and
stop.
Because eventually they can move inches within days.
It's one of the really very sort of, incredible aspects of slime moulds, that they move in a manner that's very different to other organisms.
Yeah, and I think that's what, if people know anything about slime moulds, they know about the plasmodial stage, because they use them a lot in experiments, and they are fascinating, that something that is essentially, it was at one stage included. I think they were included in the plant kingdom when there were only two kingdoms, and then they were put into the fungi kingdom because they reproduced by spores. And then they discovered this plasmodial moving feeding stage, so they put them in the animal kingdom, and then they discovered that they have this amoeboid also feeding stage, and they're currently in the protozoa. Kingdom protozoa, but I think that's... it's probably temporary. They'll probably put them in another kingdom because they're quite different from any other organism.
That is an understatement. Their advance across the substrate towards their prey seems unnatural if you're used to mammalian movement. And frankly, if it was bigger, like the blob from that 1950s movie, slime moulds would be terrifying. But the plasmodium is actually very, very fragile.
Now, there are a lot of plasmodia around at the moment, and I did find one around under here. Now, the problem is... look at that white worm. The trouble is that when you lift up... they don't like disturbance. So there was one here, and I disturbed it, and it's dried up. So that's a bit sad.
Which gives an indication of their delicate...
Yeah. That's right.
But there's all manner of invertebrates under there.
Look at the spider. I don't know what that is.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
It's white worm.
Yeah.
All sorts of things.
And that's something that I've really come to appreciate, just how rich the leaf litter and this woody substrate is. It's just so rich in invertebrates. And I spend a lot of time looking at frass, balls of invertebrate excrement, because it's about the same size as slime moulds.
is that another white worm? Maybe.
And there's a little amphipod on the...
Oh, look at that.
I think it is. Yeah.
It's like a slater-like creature.
Yeah.
Now I'm looking at every little patch of fungi thinking that I might have found something. And really, what we're looking for is the most obvious bit of the slime mould life cycle to human eyes. The time when it pushes up the fruiting bodies, the little parcels of spores that can be rushed away in the forest winds. They appear as dots, maybe a millimetre thick, all different colours. Golden, pink, yellow, iridescent. Though the colour doesn't necessarily last very long.
On Monday, it was like a little cluster of white beads. And now, here's my torch. And we're Friday, and it's drying out, and it's a little, it's like a bit like a sparkler. You know those sparklers? Yeah, it's a bit like that.
It's hard to explain. They're on a little thin stalk, which then is a sausage, and they're grouped together, so lots of stalks and lots of sausages all sort of pointing up into the air.
Yeah.
But, of course, you really would really very much overlook that because it's brown now.
You would, and the only reason... I saw it was because it was white and it had only just appeared when I saw it on Monday. And that's why there are lots of pink ribbons through the bush, because a lot of them are very conspicuous when they first appear. So they're either white beads, some of them actually hot pink or bright orange, and then they gradually go dark as they develop and they get really hard to see.
What will happen next?
I'll probably collect it and take it back and try to identify it. And under here... oh, there. That's one called Physarum album. Just a beautiful little exquisite, once again, balls on stalks, but the peridium, which is the outer covering of the spore mass, splits to look a bit like a flower. So it has a floriform structure.
Were you surprised the first time you looked at them under a microscope or with a magnifying glass?
Oh, yeah. I mean, some of them are just really beautiful.
No, I'm just petrified. I'm treading on them as I'm going.
Yeah, you probably are.
that could be a species new to science.
I know, it probably is. So here, there's another one.
look at that.
And look at the threads. So the threads in that one are just... I've seen it a couple of times before, and I think this is Prototrichia metallica, and that's another one whose type specimen was collected from Tasmania. And if you look at it, it's once again, it's balls on stalks, but the capitulium, which are the thread-like structures within the spore mass, just hang down like that. And it's the only species that I've seen that does that.
It looks like strands of fairy floss dangling off the log towards the leafy under sort of, you know, the leaves on the ground.
Yeah.
And in fact, it looks like it... Is it sticky?
No.
It's not sticky, but it's so light that the air, even our breath is moving it.
Yeah, and the spores are coming off. And actually, if you put it under a really high-power microscope, you can't see any structure on those threads.
Really? So it's just smooth?
Yeah, you probably could if you put it under a scanning.
Yeah.
But I haven't got one of them yet.
Oh, yet, she says.
And here, I think this is I think this is Cribraria. And I'll show you then when we get to the house, because they're absolutely exquisite. But I think it's lost most of its spores. Yeah, it's just a stalk with a cup, and it's lost the whole spore mass. Yeah. So, you know, you just have to check all the time.
So the spores, when you say spores, what we're talking about is something like an extremely fine dust that seems, to even the slightest touch, seems a little explosion of dust comes away from, which I'm assuming then can be carried by the wind some distance.
Yeah, they're mainly wind dispersed. Some of them are probably dispersed by invertebrates. That's the common sparrowhawk. We found something on the fuss. Something pink and collected something. Oh, look, that's a different one. Look at that! God, that's a fantastic one. I always get very excited when I see that one.
This is rose-coloured pink, absolutely gorgeous. And sort of, I have to say, not a colour that you expect to see in the forest.
No, and look, so the fruiting structures... So those ones have lost their capitulial threads, but these ones are still pretty much intact, so they're slightly elongated pink sausages on stalks.
And so that's incredible. It's a foot-long stick, about as thick as, an arm, that you just turned over, and underneath there's this glorious pink.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? I should collect. I've got my collecting kit. And the thing with this species is that pretty much as soon as you collect it, the spores, all this stuff will happen, like it'll dehiss. I'm not sure if slime molds do dehiss like plants do, but that's like a term that's fairly appropriate. You can see they're darker, so the spore mass hasn't fully dried out and developed. So I just collect a bit of that. It's quite easy to cut it off that substrate because it's nice and rotten. And just put it in the matchbox. Take it back up and it'll dry out within, a couple of hours. And I'll just note that it's an Asteria. Date, 16th of October. We're in an area I call Tismia Gully. And on dogwood, decayed dogwood.
as are blowies everywhere.
Yeah, there are a few blowies.
Wow, the light really changes as you come out of the forest into the clearing where your house is. It's like waking up from a dream. So you put a little bit into the matchbox and bring it back.
Bring it back here and they'll dry out within a couple of hours. I might put it near the stove to hasten the process. But
so how big is your collection, do you think?
I've got over 1,000 collections, so matchbox fulls.
That's a lot of matchboxes.
That's a lot of matchboxes. And it represents probably, I think last count, 120 species, but that's, obviously I haven't got a scanning electron microscope, so I might be, there's an enormous variability within species, and this is probably because they're developing rather rapidly, and they're very tiny, obviously, so you can get some that have, if you collect on, say, the Cribraria on one substrate, you can see the variability in all the different fruiting bodies. So that, I might be counting more species than I've actually got. But
so the 120 species here, just from your property.
Yeah, that's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, because how many are known?
There are about 1,000 species known to occur across the world.
So you have potentially, 10% more than 10% on your property.
Yeah, that's right. And that's because I'm here every day, so I can see Plasmodia in the field, I can mark where the Plasmodia are, and I can go back later and collect the fruiting structures. And also I think because of that there's a whole range of different substrates, so there's these really big rotting logs at various stages of decay, and there are the trees like the stringy bark, the Eucalyptus obliqua with that really stringy bark, and the Clematis and the Bedfordi that I talked about before with that really fissured bark. I think that they seem to really attract the spores perhaps, and they seem to be a really rich substrate.
Have you found species that are new to science?
I have found at least one. I found it. It was one of the first species I collected, or in that first year I was collecting, and it did resemble one that's called Tubifera bombarda, and it had this bristly capitulum, and I thought it was a bit unusual because Tubifera bombarda is only known from the tropics, and Tasmania is obviously not tropical. So I did write a little story for the Fungi Map newsletter, and a researcher in the United States must have read the story, tracked down this the fruiting structures. I had lodged some at the Melbourne Herbarium, National Herbarium in Victoria, in Melbourne, and he got some fruiting structures. One of his students was working on this group, which is the Reticulariaceae family, and they realised that it was actually a new species, and they called it Alwisia lloydiae.
Lloydiae as in your name?
That's right. I had a slime mould named after me, in my honour.
What's that like?
As a naturalist, I quite like species names to be descriptive, because I think it helps you to be able to identify that species, but it's an honour.
What about further explorations? I mean, you've already mentioned to me that you've collected a number of specimens that can be difficult to identify. Do you think there might be some new species lurking within?
I think there is another new species. I haven't. They're very difficult to identify to species level, but they're often very easy to identify to family or even genus. But this one I can't figure out at all. So, and I've collected it a number of times, and I have sent it off to one of the specialists in the US. So that could be another new species. And who knows? I mean, it's interesting. What's been interesting is that some of the really distinctive species have been ones that have turned out to be rare. So, there's a whole lot of very, very small species that
you know, I might have misidentified. Also, it's very difficult to identify. There's not been much work in the Southern Hemisphere. So a lot of the book, the reference books I use are either French or German. And a lot of the species I collect, the microscopic characteristics don't quite fit their descriptions. So they could be new species or they could be just slight variations.
Because Southern Hemisphere variation, subspecies or something along those lines.
I mean, what they found with fungi, I think when they started getting into fungi in Australia, they named them because they resembled Northern Hemisphere species, and they're finding that they're actually completely new, different species. So it could be the same for slime molds, although they do seem to have a cosmopolitan distribution, but we really don't know enough about it.
Still so much to learn about slime molds which creep around on every continent on Earth, and probably in your backyard if you're lucky enough to have one. And there are all sorts of articles online pointing towards the use of slime molds in laboratories to try and figure out new transport systems, for example. The way the plasmodium moves is a very efficient way, you see. So could we use them to map highway networks, for example? Circuit boards? Perhaps it's a big ask for a group of organisms whose common names include demon droppings, snake poo, dog's vomit, and moonshit. Sarah Lloyd's latest book, Where the Slime Mold Creeps, The Fascinating World of Myxomycetes, is available now, and I've put the details on the Off-Track website, abc.net.au/rn/off-track. That was abc.net.au/rn/off-track. Sarah Lloyd takes absolutely stunning images as well, and she's kindly agreed to share some with us, which you can also see on that website. And I highly recommend taking a look. It'll really help you understand the fascinating world of slime mould. And I also recommend taking a magnifying glass out to the nearest fallen log as soon as you can. And report back to me next week. I'm Anne Jones, and I'll be right here, right then, on RN, with Off Track, ready to take you somewhere else. Oh my goodness. So the little balls that are the fruiting structure of the slime mold have a yellowy-grey sort of powder on them, which itself has tiny little sticks with balls coming.
That's right. Yeah, that's a little fungus. And it only grows on a couple of Trichia species. So Trichia, that's Trichia botrytis, and it also, I've seen it on Trichia affinis.
That's incredible. It's like the Wheaties packet on the Wheaties packet on the Wheaties packet. It just keeps on getting smaller and smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's all in, you know, the space of 10 centimetres. Yeah.